Of course, the fold operation is a function on some type C, and both the constant and the function h live on C. Basically, these two parameters make C into a type that is sort of like the natural numbers. In particular, it has something that matches the zero, that's the C, and it has something that matches the successor function h. And what the fold operation does, it just takes a term which represents a natural number, a term that consists of, one zero at the end and lots of successors before that, successor operations, and it replaces the zero with the C and all the occurrences of successor with the H. And we had concluded the picture consisting of capital C and little c and H. I pick exactly the original natural numbers. In particular, I take C to be zero and H to be successor. Then this gives me the identity on the naturals. And then, slightly more complicated, the fusion rule. The fusion rule says something about application of a function k, which runs between two of these structures, so types equipped with operations of this kind here. And it makes an assumption, namely that k is compatible with these structures. So k of c equals c prime, and regarding these two endo functions, k basically commutes with them. That is, this diagram here commutes. Okay, and under these assumptions, so let's make this explicit. So I'm assuming that this holds, and then so I did this wrong again. So now finally. So the fold operation, of course, consumes natural numbers. How else would it replace occurrences of successor, etc., with these functions, right? So, and now we get two folds from these data C and H and C prime H prime respectively. So, well, a bit of room here. So here we have fold n of C and H, which is a function into C. And we also have fold n of C prime and H prime, which is a function into D. And we have our K, which runs from C to D, and this diagram commutes. I'm occasionally going to emphasize commutation of diagrams by writing this double cross in here. Sharp, or whatever you want to call it. Okay. So applications of the fusion rule are highly schematicized in cases of induction, basically. So more or less, if you want to match it, this is the induction, the base of the induction. Basically, it says something about the case at zero, more or less. This here is an inductive step, and this here is the conclusion that I get from the induction. And we will see an example right now, basically. Example. Yeah, this is about not shutting down the university, I guess. Good thing the room is full. Right. Okay, the good old distributive law, right? So what's the distributive law? I'm going to write it with a slightly funny choice of letters because I'm going to treat two of the letters differently than the third. So, it says something about multiplying out over a sum. So I'll write this, so it's intentional, this funny choice of letters, that this is m and n, and the x sort of doesn't follow in sequence, right? So that's because the x is the one that's going to remain a function argument until the end, while the n and the m are going to disappear in parameters that I write as indices of functions. Okay. Right, so by the well-known distributive law, this equals m times n plus m times x. Okay, we have already seen how we can define addition of some constant to the argument as a fold, right? So this was a function that we called plus index something. So in this case, of course, it's going to be indexed with n, well, at least in one case. So this is a very easy fold, right, that we've already seen. Namely, well, if we add zero, if we add n to zero, then we just get n. So this is our first parameter. And, well, if we add a number that's one larger than the one that we've already done, then the result is also one larger. So the second argument is just successor. Okay. And very similarly, multiplication with m is also a fold. Now, in this case, it's slightly different. Because we start at zero, right? And multiplying with zero is, of course, not m, but multiplying with zero gives me zero. And then I just use the plus that I've already defined. So in each step, so whenever I do successor on my factor, then I get m more. So I use plus m as the second argument. Okay. Now we're going to identify this function k that we're going to use to prove this law up there. So I'll just write it down slightly magically. So everything happens on the natural, so the types that we find in the corners of the diagrams don't help us identify which way is which. So the k that we're going to look at is going to be the one that crops up on the right-hand side here, addition with mn, right? So here we see a fold. And outside of it, we see one more function, and that's going to be rk, because that's what our fusion law gives us, right? It says, what do I get when I have a fold and then apply some function k to it? Okay, and that I match to this right-hand side. Here is a fold, m times x, and this here is going to be my k. So plus mn is k. I wanted to write this vertically, horizontally, right? So let's make this arrow k. Okay, so this thing occurs twice in the diagram, right? So we just write it down directly at the bottom as well. this is plus mn. And okay, having said this, we know how to match this to the diagram more or less, at least on the right hand side. So one of these arrows is going to be m times x, respectively the h that defines m times x. So the h that defines m times x is this one, right? Because m, right, the m times x multiplying with m is a fold of two things, and the complicated one of those is plus m. So that's right, yes. Okay. And what we get should be the fold on the other side. So we haven't yet written the other side as a fold, so it's a bit of a question mark here, right? So what would the h prime be, right? So this here is the h. That's our h. So we need to think of what the fold on the right-hand side is. Well, actually, if we look at these maps here, right, there's only one map that we can really put in there. So this here adds m times n to something, and then we do some more stuff to achieve the same effect as going down here, which is first adding m, and then adding m times n. Well, so the overall effect of this diagonal here is thus to add m plus m times n. This must happen in the way, well, this happens in the way that in the bottom way, so it must happen here as well. So thinking about it for a moment, this h prime must be plus m. I mean, what else should it be? Okay. So, okay, if at any rate, if we do outright this h prime, then the whole thing will commute, obviously, right, by what we know about addition. This is a proof about multiplication, so facts about addition, like commutativity, will be taken for granted. So, so this means that we can rewrite the right-hand side. No, this says here that this is blip, blip, blip. Okay, so sort of, yeah, I did this the other way around, then I wrote it down, but never mind. So we can rewrite the right-hand side of the law, of the distributive law. Say, how tall are these people? So let's start rewriting the right-hand side. The right-hand side is, so let's convert to this mult m notation, right? So this is plus mn of, well, actually we can write the inner part normally, m times x. So let's now explicitly rewrite this plus as a fold, right? So this is fold n of mn, comma, plus index no, not plus. Suck. No, I'm doing it wrong. Plus mn is my k. I don't want to rewrite my k as a fold. I want to write the inner part as a fold, right? So, okay, sorry. Plus mn, and now comes the fold, because that's how my fusion law works, right? So the fold should be inside. Okay, so now we want fold n of. So now we need the definition of multiplication as a fold. So we get 0, comma, plus n. Okay. Right, so recall, this is K, this is, what did I call it, H. So now the fusion law kicks in and says, okay, this is the same as I get when folding the H prime. Okay, I haven't yet said what the C prime is. Of course, the C prime can just always be calculated, right? Because, well, the condition on the C prime is that it equals K of C. Well, I can just calculate K of C. Okay, so what comes in here is plus, what was K plus Mn of, okay, C is the thing that appears in this fold on the left-hand side. So this here is plus Mn of zero. And of course, that's just, so this here, by the way, was the fusion law. And now plus Mn of zero, we have a definition for, right? So this fold N of full n of mn comma plus m. Okay, of course we know what we're doing here, right? So we can check whether this makes sense. There, I lost the x on the way, right? So the x must be inside here. And also here. And here. Right.
And how did we apply this fusion law? I didn't get it from.
Okay, so, well, this here basically is my C prime, right? So the fusion law says basically whenever K is compatible with C and C prime and also with H and A prime in this sense here, then K will transform the fold for C and H into the fold for C prime H prime. Okay, here we see the fold for C and H, and we're applying K to it, so by the fusion law it gets transformed into the fold for C prime and H prime. Okay, so that's the right-hand side taken care of, so now we need to transform the left-hand side. Okay, let's look at the left-hand side again, it's up there. All right, so am I able to guess beforehand where I find the fold? I mean, the problem is that there's two folds, so one has to really know what one is doing. So, okay, I'll cheat and look at my notes after all. Okay, so again, on the left-hand side, the fold that we're going to transform is the inner one, right? So n plus x. We see n plus x as a fold, and we apply mult m as the k to it. So how do I motivate this? So let's reserve this part here for the stuff that needs to commute and just do the calculation for the left-hand side, see what we need. So the left-hand side is mult m. Now I'm going to transform n plus x into a fold directly, right? So this is a fold n of, now here's my definition of plus n, right? So fold n of what am I adding? N. N comma suck. So that thing and then of x. Right, so that's my left-hand side of the distributive law rewritten in terms of my functions mult m and plus n already replaced by its definition in terms of the fold. Okay, now here basically I see my data, right? So this is C, this is h, and this thing here is k. So I have to basically build a diagram that permutes the k through the h, and well, then gives me some h prime that I put in on the other side. So let's do this again with the h that we have there. So the h is the successor map. Then the k is multiplication with m, appears up here, and no, and down here. Okay, and we have to figure out what this should be. And so basically here we first increase a number by one and then multiply it with m.
Plus?
Yes. Plus what?
M.
Yes. Plus m, right? So no, okay, so this is the base step in the distributive law, which I basically get from the recursive definition of multiplication, right? So the fact that this commutes is basically by the definition of this fold here. Okay, so this commutes, and therefore this thing here is going to be my h prime. So, by the fusion law, this is equal to the following fold. Well, with a C, I do the same trick again, right? I don't have to say beforehand what the C prime is. I just calculate it by applying my K. So this is mult M of what? Of N. Comma, and now comes the h prime, and h prime is plus m. Well, and magically, m times n is just a different notation for mult mn, right? That's I'm not proving anything here, I'm just changing notation. This remains plus m, which just, well, except the fact that I lost the x again, just exactly equals this guy here. Okay, so that's our proof of the distributive law using the fusion law. So, well, okay, so of course, when I sit down and try and prove the distributive law by induction given recursive definition of multiplication and addition, that's not going to be terribly hard. And in fact, any self-respecting automated theorem prover will be able to do it on its own. So what's the message to take away here? Well, the message is we can basically encapsulate induction in a formalism that doesn't even know about variables. So all we have to do is equational reasoning. So we have encapsulated induction as a purely equational rule. We prove one equation, basically we prove, for instance, this equation, or where's the other one? Disappeared. Or this equation, and we conclude other equations from it. That's all. Okay. So by the way, I'll check whether our seminar room is going to be available for this slot here, because it has better blackboards. It might not be because we run theory of programming exercises in it, but so anyway, I might announce next Friday that we move to the other room. I don't know. Right, next example. So this is a slightly ironic example, right? It's meant to be funny. So the next example is induction, good old basic induction. Of course, this is entirely circular, right? Because, well, when we proved that the diffusion rule is actually correct, we used induction. So apparently we already know about induction. But we get induction back as an instance of fusion. So let's see how this works. Just emphasize this. I mean, of course, it has sensible content. It shows that fusion is equivalent to induction. Right? So what does induction have to do with proving equality of functions of folds, basically, which is what the fusion rule does? Well, standard induction talks about is predicates, right? Predicates on the natural numbers. Well, such a predicate, I want to write this. Such a predicate is just a map from the naturals into the booleans. And what does good old induction tell us? Well, it says that if two things hold, namely if P of zero equals true, and if moreover, okay, I'm going to write a slightly stricter condition than usual, if if P of successor of n equals P of n, well, stating slightly more, right? So this is the usual inductive step plus the reverse implication. So let's not worry about that for the moment. I could write greater than or equal, but doesn't really add anything to the discussion. So if these two things hold, then P equals true bang. P is the constant map true. So let's try and prove this. So the question is, where do we find the second fold in this case? Right? We only have one fold. So the true bang. Well, maybe we find a way to write it as a fold, but okay, that's, well, actually, we will probably write it as a fold. never mind. So the interesting part is that in this case, we find a fold out of thin air using the identity law. So basically, we start transforming the left-hand side, which is just P. And by the identity law, this is the same as P composed with a fold, namely fold n of zero and successor. The identity law says that this is the identity, and of course, composing with the identity does nothing. Okay. I claim that by the fusion law, this equals fold n of, well, now do the same as I always do. I mean, I find the C prime just applying by applying P to the C here. So I get P0, comma. Okay, now P, well, P is my K, right? So P needs to commute with something. So basically with this here. And we see an equation here that does this, right? So P composed with successor is something composed with P. Well, this something is the identity on the booleans, right? So let's write this explicitly. So in this case, we have different types in R square, right? Here on the left-hand side, we have the H from this definition here. So this is successor. On the right-hand side, I have identity. And here, horizontally, I get the P. And this here commutes by 2. Oh, yeah, T is 2. I mean, this is exactly condition 2. And this here, of course, we know as well, P of 0 is true. Condition 1. Okay, so that's the left-hand side taken care of. So let's look at the right-hand side. We do the same trick. So we take the right-hand side and just use the identity law to basically make it apply to a fold. So true bang equals by the identity law, true bang composed with fold n of 0 and successor. So, and I claim that I can again apply fusion to this. Getting another fold. Well, again, so what I can read off what the C prime must be. I apply true bang to 0, getting, of course, true. And now I need to find something that I can commute over true bang, basically. So I have the I need a diagram like this, right? How does this look? So horizontally, I get in this case my K, which is true bang. which goes into the booleans. Vertically, I just have the successor function. And, well, I need to think of something to put here. Any ideas? Yeah. We can use the identity, right? Going up here then gives me true down here, and while doing something here and then applying true bang also gives me true down here. So I get well, field of n of true and identity, which is the same as I got for my right hand side. So fine. Okay, so that's two examples of how to use the identity law and the fusion law on the natural numbers. Okay, we're going to want to do this more generally. So, well, instead of doing it generally straight away, which, given our current vocabulary, we can't, we're just going to look at the next example. So that example is going to be lists. So we're going to make this type parametric. So lists over A, so these are going to be animals of this form, right? Some list of entries A1 up to AN where the AI are from A. A list might be empty, so N might be zero, basically. And we're going to write this as a recursive data type in the same style as in Haskell, a more or less, no, not quite literally. We're going to write something ASCII legal here, so the usual name of the empty list is null. And we're going to need a constructor that basically builds long list. And the usual thing that do is to use the const operator, which takes two arguments, one of type A, which is the leftmost element that I add to the list. And then, of course, a second argument, which is the list that I already have, basically. So I get constructor terms like this, right? I can apply const twice to and start with the null, basically, and add two elements, first B, then A. And I'm going to introduce a shorthand notation. Well, I'm not actually going to use that just for intuition. So this here describes a list with two entries, A and B. Right. And for this type too, we have a fold operation. Which again takes as many parameters as the type has constructors. So, and they should have similar profiles. So in this case, what was I going to call this? I again have one constant, like the zero, so the null here, so I require an element C of my target type capital C. And I require a suitable function H whose profile matches the cons. Okay, this is going to take some guessing. The A is regarded as a fixed parameter in the whole thing. So my H will also consume one argument of type A, and a second of type C. And it will return something of type C. So the H does the same thing as the const does. It consumes elements of A, and then given such an element, it transforms one element of C into another element of C. Lists are transformed by prepending the element to the list. One might choose to do something else. Okay. So we're actually going to write this fold R, not fold L, so the letter L doesn't stand for lists, it stands for the way the folding is defined, but I'm actually not sure that this is standard naming convention. The normal fold, is that the left or the right fold? I keep getting confused. It depends on the programming language. So what is it in Haskell? I would expect left, right? Let's write it left. I think that's the correct.
Otherwise, only if you have too much memory.
So let's call this thing fold left. It goes from list A to C. I'm not going to be terribly stringent about using capital or small letters, so bear with me if at some later point I might choose to capitalize the type list. Right? For the time being, we leave it like this. That's the profile of the fold function. Well, not fold L by itself, but of course, fold L of these two parameters is going to be a function from list A to C. And like last time, we can just define it recursively. Damaging our back in the process. We have two cases for the two constructors. So we have to say what fold L of C, H, and null is. Well, clearly this is just going to be C. And we have to say what fold L of CH is applied to, well, the other constructor pattern, that is to cons AL. So what do I get? Cheaters, look it up in the Haskell libraries. Fold L, of course, again with these parameters of L, exactly, right? So I basically recursively call my fold operation on the list parameter in the constructor pattern, and I apply H to A, and well, I should need to write it this way, okay, because I chose, basically because this is, the H is uncurried, right? So I have to apply it to a pair. Okay, well, actually, so is the cons, right? So the cons is also, strictly speaking, uncurried. Right, so this is the usual fold operation on lists, which some of you may have already used in functional programming. Okay, some examples. The length function. How's this work? Let's just use lambda notation, okay? Say lambda a comma l. What were you going to say?
Something with a successor.
Something with a successor, right? So successor of what? Of a. Well, a doesn't have a successor. A is of some unspecified type that doesn't really have any operations. Sorry, L is also the wrong suggestion. N. Now, of course, we know successor of what, right? So, length, of course. Sorry to interrupt. Length goes from list A to nut, right? So we're turning the natural numbers into something like the list type. We take 0 for the empty list, and now we need a constructor that consumes A and N, a natural number, and gives us back a natural number. And like you were going to say, this is just going to be successor of N, right? Basically, what this thing does is it just throws away the entries, because evidently those don't matter for the length of the list. And every time it sees a cons, it adds 1. Okay, and this here we would like to write in our point-free style. So we don't want to mention any variables. So how do I write this in point-free style? Right, suck, composed with alt-right. Right. Okay, then we want to implement a test for emptiness. Which goes from list A to the booleans. This is also a fold, namely. Yep.
True and false there.
So true as the base case, basically, right? So when I see the empty list, then of course the empty list is empty, so I return true. And yeah, as soon as I see a cons, the list is not empty, right? So I ignore all the input, the rest of the list, as well as the entry that's going to be const, and return false in any case. So this means, of course, that this isn't really properly recursive, because I never really make any recursive calls. As soon as I see a cons, I just return false. Now, one thing fairly important that also shows up on the exercise sheet. Is the map operation. So the map operation is basically higher order, that is, it consumes a function and then gives me another function back. So I give myself a function f from A to B. And I exploit that my data type is parametric, right? So I have lists over A, and I also have lists over B. So normally I would call this the map operation, but for consistency with what we do later, I'm going to call it list, not list A. I'm going to call it list F, which is going to be something that goes from list A to list B. Well, what do we want it to do? Well, we wanted to apply F pointwise to the entries of the list. That is, if the list consists of entries A1 up to AN, then it should return a list consisting of the entries FA1 up to FAN. Right, so another programming exercise. So how do we write list F as a fold? So the first case should be list F applied to the empty list, right? So that's the empty list, right? So no. Okay, let's write the second functional lambda notation again. That's maybe slightly easier to think of. So lambda A what? We also this means we also remember the type that this thing is supposed to have. So interestingly, this here is really meant to be A, right? So the this is going to be the fold for list A. Although it goes into list B, and something that starts here, so it's a fold for list A. So the first argument is of type A. And the second is going to be, so let's make this explicit actually. So we take an A, a little a from capital A, and we take a list L over B. And we have to produce a list over B. Right, so this whole thing here should have type A times list B to list B. So, Demos?
It's cons over FA, the second argument is
L. Yeah. Precisely. So, this is the whole thing in lambda notation. So, how do we write H in point freestyle? If it's not readable, just tell me. So what, this is a C, I guess. It's not a nice cons, yeah, so cons like this. Yeah, this is also slightly like this. Okay, so what's a point-free way to write this lambda term? Yep.
Cons after the pairing of F and identity.
Cons composed with pair of F and identity, right? So because pair. Times, right? Like this. Right, so let's visualize the typing of this. So remember, we're supposed to start at A times list B. And then we have this function F times identity, which goes into B times list B. So this here is F times identity, because F goes from A to B and the identity goes from list B to list B. And our cons operation, of course, the one for list B, goes from B times list B to list B. And the whole thing here we use as RH. Okay, now for the most complicated one, let's try a binary one. So we already know the tricks involved in binary operations, right? So we are going to need to curry it, but let's see what comes up. Of course, the only binary operational lists that we can reasonably think of is concatenation, right? So we're going to take two lists and concatenate them. So this is supposed to be the left end of the list and this is the right one. And because concat is too long, we just write cat. Okay. And of course, what we're actually going to define as a fold is the currying of this function, which goes from list A to list A to list A. Right. Yeah, again, let's do this functional programming style, so the way we would do it in Haskell, basically. So. So we want to write this as a fold. Okay, the left argument is the case for the empty list as the left one of the two that we want to concatenate. So. Now we need an element of this thing here, right? So which one? The effect of nil seen as a function from list A to list A when we concatenate with it. Yes. This is just identity, right? On list A, of course. I mean, concatenating from the left with the empty list does nothing, right? So I just get back the right-hand list. Okay, so let's think about the other bit. Okay, this again gets two arguments, one of type A, and the other is now slightly complicated. It's a function, right? The other is going to be a function from list A to list A. So write the dot here. So given these two animals, I'm going to have to produce a function from lists to lists. Okay, so what function is that? For the time being, how do I write a function from lists to lists using what construct? Well, yeah, eventually I'll use a cons, of course. But, well, cons of what? A, certainly, right? And then? Cons of A and identity doesn't type really. So I mean, there really should be a list as the second argument, right? Yeah, I want an L, right? But there is no L. How do I get an L? I want to program this in Haskell. What do I do? I write another lambda, right? That's what I do in Haskell. Well, in Haskell, the lambda is a backslash, right? Okay, but it's lambda L dot. Okay, now I've got my L. Now, what is my argument to the cons, the second one? L. Okay, so that would type check at least. And as we all know, I mean, well-typed programs are correct, right? So, does anybody have a laptop and a Haskell interpreter on it? We could try what happens. And we could really write this, right? I mean, modulo some syntax shifts. Sorry? Append only, well, the head would be an element of A, so that again wouldn't type check. Ah, that's what happens, yeah, right. So we would append only, exactly. So the, is that what would happen? So wait a moment, I take the L, so basically if I don't write F there, I don't perform a recursive call, more or less, right? So I mean, so now I've given it away. What's the correct thing that I put there? F of L, right? I mean, the F should be in there, right? So I mean, just guessing, I arrive at this term here, right? I mean, there's nothing else I can reasonably write. I cannot. So this is a proper recursive function. So I cannot just throw away this argument here. So let's think about what this does, right? So in the recursive call, the F is the append function or the prepend function on lists that I get from the tail of my argument list. And the adding the A turns it into prepending the full function. So what do? I first prepend the tail and then I cons with A. Fine, this should do it. Okay, now the question is, how do I write this thing in element-free style? So let's best write down the type, right? It goes from A times so these are the two arguments of H, and then H goes into list A to list A. Write it as an H.
I think last time we write it as a H, and then we bring the parameters inside of it.
So the first thing we do have to do does have to do with the parameters, right? So I mean, the problem is we need to produce a function, and we don't really know how to do that. So what is the trick that we always do to avoid this? we use currying, right? Or in this case, uncurrying. So this here is this there. Well, so here we're a bit stuck, but we have it easier when we write h as uncurry of something, say h prime, where h prime now has this thing as an additional, as a third argument, right? So h prime has these three arguments, one from A, one from list A to list A, and one from list A, and it goes into list A. Okay, now for H prime, we should be able to come up with a point free definition. Sorry, of course, H isn't uncurry of H prime, but curry of H prime. So what can I do? I mean, there should be one reflex that one has, right? Seeing these two things here. The last thing we do is a cons, right? So let's start writing this down here. So cons goes from A times list A to list A. So that's cons, right?
So for the cons, we do an identity times function application.
Exactly, right? So we start out here. So let's put brackets around the right-hand Cartesian product to be clear. So basically, the A is left unchanged. I never do anything to the A except I put it into the cons here, right? So this is just identity on A in the left-hand part. And in the right-hand part, I do function application, right? I take this times f, so this will take the function from list A to list A and plug in the argument from list A. And what comes out is again going to be something from list A. And this is exactly what happens in this term here, right? The f that I get is applied to this L here. What you can see already now, we're going to make this formal at some very, very much later stage, is that these curry and uncurry operations are very much related to the lambda. Well, basically, curry is lambda. Okay. Now, now we've seen how to use the fold for programming, and of course we would like to get similarly snappy proof principles as we had for the fold on the naturals. And in fact, this text takes exactly the same shape. So first of all, we have an identity law. So what's the identity law? Right, so we can write identity as a fold, namely as the fold of nil and cons. I'm not going to bother proving this, right? So, I mean, if one does prove it, right, then one proves it by structural induction on lists, as we have already done, as we've done it in the case of natural numbers. And the fusion law. Okay, how does the fusion law look? So I'm going to start off. I mean, again, we're going to give ourselves a function from C to D. And this function is going to have two properties, namely regarding to C and H, respectively C prime and H prime, that we want to plug into a fold.
K of C is C prime. K composed with H equals
So let me briefly check whether this is probably not quite right yet, but we will be able to somehow correct it. So let's look at the diagram. It's always easiest to write these things down in terms of diagrams. So this is the H, the typing of the H. H is of type A times C to C. And H prime is of type A times D to D. Then here we have the H, and here we have, okay, it takes some guessing. I haven't formally said what to put there, but it's only one guess, really.
Isn't the pair, also a pair of identity and H?
Pair of identity and H, not quite. Pair of identity would be this here. Which would have a different type, or actually not type at all, because depending on what identity is. But so it's not quite that, but yeah, identity times H, right, or cross H. Yes. you meant that. I know you meant that, but so that's why I thought I'd write down this to see so you'd see what pair means. But right, so. Yeah, the basically the only map that we can think of here, right? So this should commute. And then, well, we get more or less literally the same law as in the case of the natural numbers. If this all commutes, then K composed with fold left of C and H is fold left of C prime and H prime, and let's do this diagrammatically again. The left-hand map here, fold left of C and H goes into C, and the right-hand one goes into D, so that's fold left of C prime and H prime, and K goes from C to D, and this thing commutes. Okay. Ah, right, we need to fix this, right? So so this is H prime. So yeah, of course I confused all the letters, right? So this here should be K, and this should be identity times K, obviously. I mean, as in the other diagram. and we put it into this law here, identity times k. Right. Okay, we'll defer examples to the next session, but so again, as a reminder to things theory of programming, I'm going to do the proof by structural induction of this law here. All right. So okay. So let's be explicit about what we want to show. Right. We show. That the left-hand side applied to some list L equals the right-hand side applied to the same list L by induction on L, structural induction. So structural induction means I go through the constructors of the data type. In this case, there's two, nil and cons. And for the recursive, well, I show that for each of these cases, the claim holds. And in the recursive cases, in this case, only in the case of cons, I can assume that the claim is already correct for all the constructor arguments of type list. So. So here's the case for nil. So k of fold left of is this correctly bracketed? No. This way. So k of fold left ch of L equals. Well, first of all, I plug in the definition of fold L of C and H, right? So this is K of C, and this equals C prime. Fine. So this here is by assumption. And then cons. Again, K of fold left CH, did I say L? No, nil. Nil. The fact that nobody protested against this means that you're all still writing, so wait until you're done. Well, but if it was just L, how would I conclude that the result is C, right? Yes, it does type check, but I mean, in proofs, even less than in programs, is it true that everything that type checks is also correct? So, okay, so now comes the case where this thing here is cons AL. So again, I unfold the definition of fold, right? So this is the constructor case of fold. So this is K of H. Of, so now the H takes two arguments. One of them is the A, and the other one is a recursive call of fold LCH to the second constructor argument. So this is fold LCH applied to L. Okay, brackets. Now, the inductive hypothesis kicks in because we already know what this is, right? No, it doesn't. First, the assumption applies. So the assumption tells me I can commute the k under the h and convert it into h prime. All right, so this by assumption equals h prime, well, of now identity times k, right? So that means I do nothing with the a and I apply k to this part here. So this is a comma k of fold left ch of l. Now the inductive hypothesis applies because this thing here is basically our claim, or the left hand side of our claim, but for the constructor argument L. So this is already assumed to be equal to the right hand side. So this is h comma h of h prime of a comma what fold left now of c prime h prime and L. And by the definition of fold left, this is fold left of C prime H prime of cons AL. Right, so that's the proof of the fusion law. Okay, any questions? Okay, lunchtime.